Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figure Studios, Weekend Geek Update. Smurf here, doing another spotlight. Of course, to my left, your right. I had to look at the watch. Which side is that? Where? PJ Pop Culture.
Hello.
The Wakeman running the camera. Ta-da! And this week's special guest, the man that brings the swagger to art unlike any other you have ever seen, Mr. Matt Campbell, legend. Superstar extraordinaire. But we'll get into your history in a moment. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You know, I cannot believe, because we go back. We've been in this world 4 years, and I've never had you on, and I felt bad. I've had Barry on twice, Barry McLean. I've had Barry on twice, and I haven't even had you on once, so I felt bad, and I apologize.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
But you are always busy when I see you at a con.
Yes.
You do not let grass grow beneath your feet, to say the least.
It's good to be the king.
It is good to be the king.
I work really hard at trying to build it up. I generally, that's my biggest problem at conventions, is I'm working it so much that I don't get time to get out and enjoy it.
Is that bad? I don't know.
Well, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that it's difficult for me to go an entire day at a convention and not just be hurting at the end of the day. Because I put out so much energy. Like, everybody that comes to the table, you're either giving the spiel, or sometimes they're like, hey, I read the last issue, it was awesome, and you're having a conversation, but you're just putting out energy. I mean, in the same sense that you are when you're doing a podcast like this. Mm-hmm. I do it all day long and standing most of the time.
It is draining. Yeah. People don't understand how much. I mean, I hate to say it, some people can't keep up. I mean, they've been on the floor with me. Red won't walk a con anymore. Red's like, no, I'm out. I don't care. Just get a booth. I'll sit at it. I don't fucking care.
My dad's shoes.
Yeah, you know, so everybody, exactly. But at the end, it's tiring. And then do 3 days of it, and you're just like, fuck, I'm ready to just take a nap.
Yeah, I'm finally getting to the point now where, some way or another, there's someone else at the table to help. I'm going to start probably eventually, like, only being at the tables for a few hours and have a little sign at the table said signings will be occurring at this time.
Yeah, it's not, time to be the star, not
exactly.
Like management, production.
Right.
So let's get into this. When did you start? Because, I mean, I've always seen you as like a staple in the cons, but my memory goes to weird in some spots. But when did you really start, or when have you been doing this from?
Well, by this, you mean just in the comics industry?
Yeah.
So when I first started doing comics, it was around 2010. I have to give credit to McLean McGuire and the CCP crew down in Texas. I actually knew someone who used to live here locally named Rita Moore, and she kind of put us in contact, and they needed an artist. And so I did a small job for them.
Nice.
And then they started inviting me to go to a couple shows, and I think it was a Texas show that I went to first, whereas the first show I did behind a table.
Right.
And then...
And you got the bug, didn't
you? I got the bug. I was like, okay, I like this. And then I came back, and I started working on either other people's books or working on Mythica, and okay. I've done almost every Denver Comic Con. I was at the very first one.
Yeah, I was in there with you.
And I just has been a slow build. But my focus has always been to, you know, get recognized in Colorado. Make sure everyone in Colorado knows what Mythica is, and then start thinking about branching out farther.
Then go global.
Yeah. Sorry, well, because one of the things I discovered was the first few years that I did conventions, with CCP, we went everywhere. Right. I went to New Orleans 4 times, which if you've ever been to New Orleans show, you should definitely go. Yeah, it's amazing food.
It's a worthwhile trip.
Yeah. And so, but after I was selling out of prints and books at these shows, and so I would
and
go.
And this is your original work that you're selling out
yeah,
of.
Yeah, yeah. And so I would go to one of the vendors for the local comic shops there at the table. I'd go to one of the local comic shop vendors, I should say, at the show and say, hey, I'm doing really well here. Your fans seem to like my stuff. Will you carry my book? No. and I understand why. It's like we're a small shop. Shops don't make that much money anyway, and they can only support so many indie comics.
So. And it's extra paperwork for them. They're already thinking, okay, so am I doing a consignment? Are you selling it wholesale? And it's not in their system. So it does create, depending upon what they're doing, it can be a headache.
Right.
But it's very narrow-minded.
So, and I think that's changing because so many things are going to independent nowadays. This was, 10 years ago. But back then, I realized, okay, I can't put my effort into trying to go, nationally. I want to make sure that all of Colorado is carrying my books and they know my books.
Right.
And then by that point, I could probably branch out into New Mexico and Wyoming and Nevada, and they might carry it. And then by that point, maybe it's big enough to, go into previews or something. Mm-hmm. But between now and then, Kickstarter came along.
Kickstarter came along. Beautiful. Previews beautiful gave up the ghost. And
yeah. and now I'm doing great with Kickstarter. That's kind of the new part of the new business model.
So did you ever apply to or send in submissions to Image, or have you ever talked to anyone at Marvel?
I talked to some people.
Because I know you've gotten noticed. There's no way you've not been noticed.
Right. I've talked to some people who have had their books published through Image, but I've never talked to anybody at Image directly. Mm-hmm. For instance, I just blanked his name. I'm really bad with names.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I'm the worst.
the artist of Chew.
I know who you're talking about.
I met him through CCP as well, and he had his book, going through Image, and so we talked a lot about what their requirements were and what they were looking for. And that was actually a possibility, but early on when I looked through at what Diamond wanted, they wanted me to have – they said they would carry Mythica in previews, but they wanted me to have several thousand copies pre-printed.
Whoa,
like,
wow.
On hand. Ready. Just in case.
In case there's a run.
There's a run. And they don't look bad.
Rob Gilroy is.
Gilroy, yeah, that's right. And what Rob had told me was that Image was really great about, if they picked up your book, they were looking for something that they felt was different and marketable, which Mythica may have applied to that.
Still is. Mm-hmm.
The next thing that they were looking for is, what was your production rate? How fast were you going to be able to create the next book, and how many books were going to go on? And that's where I was not ready yet. I was scared because I was doing everything myself still.
Right.
All the coloring. The only thing that I was getting help with was the lettering, which McLean was doing. But between the art and the coloring and still kind of learning things, I didn't feel like I could crank out books fast enough. So I decided I was going to wait till I was ready. But then again, like I said, between then and now, Kickstarter came along. And Kickstarter's not requiring that you have a book every month. When you get an next book, as long as you're keeping in contact with your fan base and stuff.
With your promoters,
your
producers as you market it. I checked it out. I was a little bit too late. The Kickstarter ended in March, and I saw the top tier was executive producer. I was like, oh, that would be
That'd
so
be a nice
dope.
Title to have.
So, yeah, actually... It's funny because there's a lot of people who wanted to jump on board that. There was only one executive producer that came with the original art of the cover. You might know Gareth. He's the one who got that.
Gareth. Gareth's been on a couple times, actually.
And not only did he get the original art, but he also got it pre-framed.
So he got this that's on your Facebook page?
That he got the original line art for that.
Wow. That's Gareth, you bastard. I'm going to have words with that motherfucker.
He also got listed as executive producer in the book. He got copies of the book. But then we also had 8 producers who got something similar but without the original artwork. And then, you know, went down from there. But, you know, the main thing is, like, once I first did my first Kickstarter, you get this fan base of emails, and then I keep emailing them saying, hey, thanks for your support. I'm working on the next one. Here's some sneak peeks of it. Kind of just keep reminding them that you're
keep
working on it.
Peppering them it.
And then so cool. When it comes time to do the next Kickstarter, like, every single Kickstarter has grown. It never stagnates for me. It never goes down. The numbers always keep going up as far as the number of followers. And so this last Kickstarter, what my focus was that if you've supported a Kickstarter before, you've probably seen that they'll have, like, incentive bonus.
Yeah, different tiers.
Well, like, and not only goals? Different tiers, but, like, yeah, the, like stretch goals.
Stretch goals.
Like, you reach this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so, like, our goal was 5,000, but if we get to 10,000, we're going to do this, right. You know? And I had done that before, too, but I felt like it just kind of centered around mm-hmm. the money. So what we did this time, or the last time, is we said, we're going to base this on backers. So right off the bat, at 35 backers, everyone got this.
See,
and at
50 like
backers,
that.
Everyone got this. And so the reason I chose to do that is that it incentivized people mm-hmm. to share more than it did, in my opinion, the financial goals. Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, well, we need more people, not more money. Like,
right.
You can be $1, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be part of something new.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, even if you're only, you know, submitting $1. So, and the end result of that was that we blew out, you know, the number of backers that we did previously by like 300%.
Awesome job, dude.
Jesus.
So, that's kind of like, you know, our new model. And so, again, we're going to go back, and it's time for issue 8, which I'm super excited about. It's going to have, like, some intense action going on.
I love how humble you are, because you just flew by that percentage.
Like, 300%.
Like, oh, yeah, you know, fuck it up. Anyways,
now, can you attribute your success with Kickstarter because of the plan or because of the storyline and the art? Because now you've got, and you say issue 8 is about to hit. So
right.
Do you think it's, now everyone's kind of like getting into the story and your approach and the art? Because you were nice enough to send me a digital copy, and I loved it. I was just like,
oh, good.
Tasty.
especially that issue. There's
yeah,
some tasty
there's
stuff.
There's some tasty shit in that. I'm like, yummy. I'm gonna read that again. I may have to buy that in a hard copy. But what do you think? What do you attribute to? Is it a mixture of both, or because it's such a? And you and I were talking about marketing and everything that goes into it. What do you? I mean.
Well, I mean, obviously, I think the answer is you know, multi-leveled, but I do feel like you've heard the adage before that, like, you know, you can use a lot of different tricks to get people to come and get your book, that first book.
Right.
But the fact that we're on issue 8 and we're growing tells you about the story, that people are coming to see
yeah.
more about the story.
Proof is in the pudding.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
There are no bad characters. They're just bad stories.
And I think the other part of it, though, is over the years, it's taken me a while to get it down, but over the years, we've kind of honed down the marketing to demons, dames, and a Scotsman with a blade. And you know,
that sounds like a good time to me. That's a party.
Right?
If you've been to Scotland,
so
Glasgow.
I think part of it has to do with, like, when we make the Kickstarter, one of the things I try to make clear early on in the thing is, like, what's this story really about? Because so often I see people who are like, well, my book is about a character who has these powers. And I'm like, that's not a story. That's a premise. You know, it's just you got an idea for a character.
What's the motivation?
You know, what's the dilemma? What's the conflict?
Right.
What are they trying to achieve? You know, and it's funny, too, because that's something that I teach in school. So we go over that particular subject a lot. Like, what is a story?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when it comes to marketing a book, that's the thing that you need to tell people on, or sell right. people on, is like, what is at the core of this story? Is it, you know, a coming of age story? Is it about, you know, overcoming some particular adversity? Because that's what people are going to relate to and mm-hmm. hold on to.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
That being said, what inspired Mythica? So for the fans who don't know, Mythica is set in World War One. It's mm-hmm. a Scotsman meets a sultry spy, mm-hmm. and they team up against demons, vampires, and all of the unholiness of the dark.
it is delicious.
That's what attracted to me. It was like, it kind of broke away from like your typical storyline of like, I'm regret saying this, but I love Marvel. I love movies. I'm PJ pop culture. But I'm getting a little burnout on superheroes, man.
So yeah, like, there's a lot of it.
There's so much.
I like and that I think, it's stuck in like real time, and I believe there probably was demons and vampires in World War One because that was a shit war.
Man. It was a shit war.
It was a shit war.
And I think that's why Image has been growing so much in popularity, is because they've broken the cape mold, and they've got some very compelling stuff. I mean, Jorge Corona. I mean, mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. whole Middle West storyline was
yeah. great. They got some amazing stuff.
What inspired
Mythica?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
besides the Scottman and some beer.
Yeah. Well, that was a big part of it. I was going to say it started off with I had not seen Scottish characters in comics. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have a character with kilt, a big, you know, big brooding, you know, awesome character. So that was step one.
Like a Scottish Cimmerian, right?
Yeah, something like that, right? And then the next thing was that I enjoy, you know, drawing, you know, monsters and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted to have a story that encompassed that. And so that was the starting point. At first, I was just sketching those things. Then, as you start playing with the designs of these characters, you start thinking about who they are. It starts building. And I realized that what I wanted to do was have these characters who are starting to show some abilities fighting these demons want to, all these different government factions, you know, basically be chasing after them. Mm-hmm. And so they were on the run, and that was sort of inspired by Firefly, the show,
yeah.
oh, right? Where they just wanted to be left alone and cruise
the skies. We just
want
to exist. Is that so wrong?
So what? I was a brown cow. Right?
So I realized, so originally the idea was it was going to be placed in modern times. And I realized, well, that's going to make it really difficult to hide because mm-hmm. everything with satellites is just so easy to track people. So at the time I was working with one of the earlier writers, I got writers to help me write my ideas into scripts at the beginning because I didn't have a lot of experience with that. I just had scenes and ideas. All right. So William Tooker helped me write the first three issues. He works with Kevin Gentilcore in a lot of his books. But we kind of worked this out together, was that we were like, well, don't want it to be modern times, but we do want the governments to be chasing after them. So let's go back in time. And we stopped briefly at World War II, but realized that everyone had been doing that. There's a lot of that. And so we went farther back. And when we hit World War I and I started researching it, I fell in love with it because of the aesthetic of it. You have like steel ships that are on the ocean. While there are still sailing ships, like old galleons on the ocean, you have cars while there's still horse-drawn wagons.
Right.
This merge of different cultures are clashing into each other. And I was like, okay, this is aesthetically beautiful to work with. Plus, there's a World War I going on. So if you have all of these different governments saying, hey, these guys can help us win the war, let's go get them. Now you have, you know, a reason to chase after them. So that started to set the stage. Mm-hmm. But then once we started writing, I realized, you know, I wanted to really kind of narrow down the lore of this book. At first, I had the idea of just, you know, not really being vague about where all their abilities came from. But then I realized, you know what? I really want to narrow this down to the Celtic lore. And so as that's the book so unfolds, dumb, yeah. we keep getting these hints of like where this, these things are coming from. And it all comes from these, the Tuatha De Danann, these old ancient gods of the Celtic mythology. Again, something that's not talked about a lot in mm-hmm. comics. And so they do have abilities, but we don't really consider them, you know, like superheroes.
You're not like a mutant or...
Yeah. And they have things that are more on the magic kind of spectrum, like the Fae. And they start to use some of that to fight these demons. We find out that the demons, you know, are also kind of coming from that same lore.
Yeah.
And so it gives you a place for where this stuff comes from. And so if you're familiar with Celtic mythology, mm-hmm. you'll start to catch some of that stuff and go, oh, I see where I think they're going with that, you know?
Yeah, I like the idea, too, like, give little hints so people are like, well, what the hell's that? And then they go look it up, and they learn something. And
that's exactly when, you know, I started reading comic books. What the hell is that word? And, right. you know, you go and look it up.
right.
And you do a perfect peppering of both mythology and your story that it compels right. the reader to want to learn more, want to find out.
Like
more.
An Assassin's Creed of comic books.
Kind
of,
yeah.
It is. Yeah, that's an excellent analogy.
I got to say well that done. The other influence of this was Supernatural, the show. I'm a big fan of that show. Mm-hmm. And I always loved that they had, like, they would often have, like, a big theme for the season, or, like, the big bad guy that they were trying to defeat.
The overarching story.
But then they would have these, like, one-offs, mm-hmm. you know? And because the thing that I noticed about TV shows that I was like, I want to do that someday, was that you'd watch a show and it was written and directed by someone totally different. And I was like, that's what I want to be able to do, is like bring in a guest writer, bring in a you know, guest artist,
yeah,
and have them slide in an issue that, you know, all I need to do as the editor is make sure that
it hits the key points.
It hits the key points and fits.
Yeah, got to start and finish.
Because I want to pull a Todd McFarlane and eventually, like,
just have Capullo do your work.
Have Capullo do my work. Yes, exactly. I tried to get him to do it, but yes, that would be awesome.
Did you like how Supernatural ended?
I got to tell you, I'm about 6 episodes from ending it. I was like, I got to tell you why though. I have been diligently watching for a long time, and I think I got to that last season, and I started, like, finding myself not watching it and watching everything else but that.
Right.
And I finally realized that if I finish it, it's over.
It's over.
Right.
And so I keep, like, not finishing it.
I know the new episodes of Lucifer out, and I don't want to watch it because, you know, then I won't have anything to watch, because I'll blaze
right.
through them.
Right.
I know exactly
right.
what you mean.
Yeah, so I've been trickling in like one a month.
just going to drag it out for the rest of the summer.
And then I have my favorite episodes that I'll go back to.
What are your favorite episodes?
One of my favorite ones is where Dean gets scared.
I actually just watched that episode.
And so he's afraid of everything. Like, he opens up the cabinet and there's a cat in there, and he's like, screams like a girl. I love actually, so a lot of my favorite episodes are sort of the side funny episodes, but I love that show so much. My cats, I have two black cats named Sam and Dean.
Nice.
And they are featured on my Facebook and Instagram occasionally.
My favorite one is the one of my favorites is the one shot through the perspective of the car.
Yes,
that was
awesome too.
So
with the toy and the
it was
touching.
So well done, and just kind of like, oh
yeah.
I mean, it was just it was perfect, and I could see someone doing Mythica justice the same way, because right. I mean, the characters are very established.
So yeah, here's my thought, right? They just announced Sweet Tooth comes out on June 4th, right? Already
yes.
on Netflix.
Yes.
All right. I like Sweet Tooth. I think Mythica could easily be a Netflix
ass.
Series, and
and
there's boobs.
Yeah, there's boobs.
There are boobs.
Now, that is one thing. I love Supernatural, but they were always within the limitations of being on television.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so as much as I loved how they were hunting all these demons, and you had all kinds of different demons, I wanted to do that, but Mythica is a lot more violent. It's like
it's
the boys' level violent.
It's a little more adult oriented.
Yeah,
where
I mean,
yes,
there's boobs and there's violence and
there's decapitations.
Yeah. I'm excited about issue 8 because issue 7, which just came out, it's the one that you just saw, starts a new chapter, a new book,
new story.
And so that first issue is a lot of like, this is our new location, this is what's going on, but then. In the next issue I'm working on right now, I've got Magnus getting ambushed by like 6 vampires, and the only weapons he has are his little, you know, what they call them, skiandu, the knife that you have in your boot,
a little boot blade,
and he's just got these little boot blades, and he's going up against 6 vampires who can heal, and there's just this all out brawl, and I've just been like becoming a fight choreographer for the last 2 weeks.
You need some action figures. We've got a couple.
Well, the thing that I've been trying to do is that I started researching every fight scene I can come across. I watched a lot of fight movies. Mm-hmm. I watched Tony Jaa. I watched everything I can get my hands on. And in comics, I saw that, you know, the most common thing to see in comics is just haymakers, you know, just big just punches,
big right,
you know.
Hook,
and I'm like, okay, I want to... I want to take it beyond that. I want it to feel like, you know, there's this punch and then this one follows it, you know, and I want to see people ducking punches and missing punches. And I also, you know, want to see jaws getting ripped off and you know, stuff like that.
Well,
so.
Like one of my favorite fight scenes, we posted it up as a moment of geek last week, was Benny the Jet versus, I can't think of his name all of a sudden, from Wheels on Meals, Jackie Chan.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of, like, the best fights those two do. There's another movie that they're in, but this one they were pissed off at each other, and you can just see it in that fight. And
I'll have to check it out then.
Yeah, it's on the page, actually. It's a quick, like, 5-10-minute fight, and it's so well done.
I actually have referenced a lot of Jackie Chan because I felt like this sort of ambush lent itself to... What else could I fight with? Because, you know, these little knives aren't doing it. So,
have you seen Army of the Dead, Zack Snyder's new Netflix movie?
I just saw that,
The fight scene with the girl. Remember? She's fucking badass.
Yeah.
It's such a dumpster fire, and I love every freaking minute of that movie.
That's a good
disaster. I had to go back and look at that movie again, realizing how much he was setting up for like a franchise.
Dude.
Because the first time I watched it, I was like, is that zombie's eyes glowing blue?
So there's aliens, there's robot zombies, regular zombies, time travel.
Yeah, was that?
Yeah.
Yes, that's an alien. There's aliens in this.
And robot zombies.
Yeah, robot zombies.
Was that a cyborg? Was that I was just tripping?
No. It was a cyborg.
It was a cyborg.
Okay.
I mean, he's setting it up.
Yeah. Well, those are the aliens that were like turned by the main zombie.
Okay.
And the queen was pregnant with an alien baby.
Which, I mean... It was funny because I was watching that movie with my girlfriend, and before they cut that out, like, there was 2 scenes where he put his ear up to
it. And
I whispered to my girlfriend, I was like, is she pregnant? And my girlfriend looked at me and shook her head. She's like, no, you know? And then, like, a few seconds later, he's cutting it up. I was like, oh, look at that. I can't believe it.
And that's exactly what I was like. Zombies are getting down in the apocalypse. I love it.
Yeah.
And it's just so
I mean, I don't
want
to pay for Pornhub.
No. That's, I mean, that's just
but if that's know. Your thing, you go ahead.
You know, it gives a whole new meaning to a little head. You know, it's just, I don't know. But it was, I mean, Batista really was good in that film. He was not Drax.
Yeah.
He was not Drax.
Well, I got to tell you, I feel like he carried that movie.
He did.
Had all the emotional support of that movie. There was a lot of stuff that didn't make sense. Like, I don't care what the circumstances. I don't think you'd allow your daughter into that place.
No, not at all.
But he carried all the emotional weight. Like, all the heavy emotional scenes were done by him. And I feel like it really, you know, shows what a good actor he is.
It really showcases him.
When I first saw Guardians, I loved his character, but I felt like the writers just smartly wrote it for him so that he didn't have to, like, be something outside of his comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But then I started seeing things like Stuber, which is a
fantastic, fun
movie.
Yep.
Yeah. And a lot of other movies, I think he's a much better actor than people realize. But, yeah.
He carries that film, without a doubt.
You can see his growth as an actor. I mean, I always think, you mentioned The Rock.
The Rock.
I think
he's way better than The Rock.
Remember The Rundown?
Yes. I'm
like, God, some really bad acting. But now he's fucking got his own TV show, and he's really, really good.
He's good. Yeah. But
you see the progression.
I see.
It's funny. I reference The Rock a lot for the physicality of Magnus, because I like to catch those, more... like the moments that are just conversation pieces, I like to have like hands moving and
natural,
try to catch some of that stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I like to I've referenced a lot of movies when I work. I feel like that's my weakness, honestly, is that, in fact, I think it was,
10 seconds.
We'll just pause it.
Yeah. It's weird. Just got to do that.
Yeah. Weird. Gotta love Sony.
Well, I mean, they're great cameras. This one's built for photo and video, and it's much less expensive than a Sony FS7.
You hit again?
Yep, you're good to go. And
3, 2, 1. So you're, but there's nothing wrong with like what motivates you, what drives you when, I mean, so you're watching TV or you're watching movies, but I mean,
well,
natural,
I mean,
movement, you
talk with
your hands.
I like movies, I reference movies, yeah. But like, I think it was, Mile High Comics gave a review of my book saying it was the most cinematic comic they'd seen in the last 10 years.
Rosansky said that?
No, one of the other people that worked there.
Okay.
I have, forget his name, but I used to have that as a quote because that was something I was pretty proud of. But then I sat down with Capullo one day,
speaking of Capullo,
and he's looking through my work, and that was his biggest critique, is he's like, you're not really using the comic medium to its full potential. And what he means by that is, like, when you have a character that's say falling off a rooftop, you have this long slender panel that you can use to create that long sense of falling, rather than have a widescreen
you just see a small little image,
right? And so that's what he's saying, is like, you know, comics tend to be more over the top. When people are sad, they're super sad, you know, you have to kind of exaggerate things in order to make it feel like a comic.
Well, and to his point, there is one in the Court of Owls in Batman where Batman is tripping and he's falling into like the psychosis of the drugs, and Capullo lines out the panels as it's going into the spiral. So you find yourself
turning
twisting the comic.
Yeah, yeah. That reminds me of, that old Daredevil artist, Straczynski, I think it was?
Straczynski, yeah.
Yeah, he used to do a lot of that crazy stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when you really start to realize that you're using the medium the way it can be used.
Well, I mean, and even looking at, I pulled up one of your pages. I love the line work and even, like, the expressions and everything that you have such a gentle touch. I mean, you can feel her emotion, and this dude just wet himself. I mean, I don't I mean, just looking at the line work and how you're telling the story and you're laying it out is spectacular.
Well, thank you, man.
Because, I mean, even look, your panels and your flow are absolutely brilliant.
Well, I've put a lot of focus in the last several years, especially since I teach comics now, in one panel connecting and flowing together, leading the eye, you know, where you want it to look.
Right.
And so I feel comfortable that I've gotten really good at that. Mm-hmm. But where I'm trying to push myself now is to really push that dynamicism to where it has that more comic feel, where characters feel like they're leaping off the page. You know,
well, you got
and
your
sometimes I get it.
Yeah. Well, no, you got it great, because here's your Scotsman in the middle of a freaking snowstorm, and he is goddamn wearing a kilt. That is just Scotsman through and through. That is amazing. I love it.
How much inspiration did you take from Frank Miller, too? Because I like the way you play on the shadows a lot.
I am a big fan of Frank Miller. I do love heavy shadows. I feel like that's something else that's new to starting from issue 7 going forward, was that the first 6 issues, as I told you, I was doing all the work by myself, and I was trying to find a way to speed up production. All
right.
So what I ended up doing was I drew all the pages in pencil just really tight, and then I adjusted them to be dark and colored over them. I was inspired by, I think it was Ultimates 3 with Joe Madureira.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Joe Mad.
And so I was like, okay, that looks cool. I could do that. And it did work. I like how a lot of it turned out, but it didn't have that dark feeling. And I was going for more of that Batman dark, you know, where there's a lot of blacks on the page, and I wasn't getting that. So I said, okay, when I start this new chapter, this new book, I'm going to push the darks. And so that's where I've been with this.
Leaning in.
Especially in those last few pages where you see that woman getting followed.
Right.
I'm really setting the tone with a lot of the darks following her and being around her. And the other thing I have a passion for is backgrounds. There's a lot of background painting and background environment stuff, because I have a lot of fun with that being part of the tone and the vibe.
You know?
It kind of brings out the forefront.
Well, and exactly, because in this panel right here, where it's like the den, you've got, you know, Boar's Head, you know, I'm guessing Foster's, and a Patronus hanging all on the wall. It's absolutely great.
Well, it's sort of foreshadowing that he's a hunter.
Yes.
Nice.
It's very, very well done. And it is great foreshadowing. And I really like the mechanic and the storytelling that you got going on.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, so you've also mentioned the teaching aspect of it. Because Action Line is so much more than just your publication.
Yeah.
When did you decide that teaching is the next progression in your own development? As well as, like, you know, saying, okay, I need to help shepherd along what I'm seeing out there.
I've always felt like one of the things that I saw and learned early on in my art school was that a lot of people, when they're first starting out, pulls out a giant pint of glass for a shot.
I only need a little one.
Well, it's time for Eagle Rare. For those that are just listening and not watching it, Eagle Rare came out. You got your rum still.
I got my rum still. I'm good.
You want more?
No.
No. Okay.
That's a double.
That's not a double.
Well, that's what happens when you hand him a pint glass.
Shit.
Well,
it's.
This is. I have.
It's barely
very
two fingers.
Small fingers.
Barely two.
Four fingers.
He's lying.
Such a lie.
Cheers. Cheers, mates.
Cheers.
Thanks again. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes, yes, thank you. No.
Everything.
Cheers. So, to answer your question about teaching, I've always felt that early on when I was in art school, I learned that a lot of people are afraid to share what they know because they're afraid someone will take that power away from them. Mm-hmm. So if I show you how I'm doing this thing in Photoshop, then you'll know how to do it, and I will no longer be relevant.
And now I'm the bottom of the totem.
Right. So everyone's afraid to show it. And I realized that when I looked at the people who were people I looked up to, like Greg Capullo, they're more than happy to show their stuff because they know you're not going to take away their abilities and their ideas. Like, they can show you all day long, and you're not going to be them.
No.
Right? And so that was one reason. But the other thing was that when I started, Ron Root helped me start Action Line, we were passionate about creating stories, telling stories. And as I started making my own and running into my own hurdles, I started realizing there was a lot of other people who were running into the same hurdles. I ran into a lot of people who had an idea for a story but didn't know what else to do with it.
Exactly the same spot you were when you started this 10 years ago.
So I decided, well, you know, I want to help people tell their stories as best as I can. And I've that's been a learning curve as well. So I have a Patreon where I put out, you know, tutorial content and behind the scenes Mythica content and stuff like that. But then I started teaching at the college because a lot of people were asking me to teach. I actually was teaching at like an art center for a while, just sort of, you know, sporadically. But then I ended up getting a job teaching at the college, and surprisingly, like I do teach a design course, but then I was able to, allowed me to do a comic book class as well as a concept art class for video games.
Wow.
And when they were really sure, but they were like, let's try it.
We'll see if anyone signs up for this.
Yeah. and then it took off. People were, you know, we have had, you know, a very successful run at it now for 5 years. And the way that we do it is that each semester, when I do the comic book class, we start with, you know, what is a comic and the terminology and stuff like that. And then we get into, like, what is a story.
Right, the mechanics.
And then we end up, drawing out and inking a complete 3-page story with a title makes it 4. And then all the students do that, and we put it together into an anthology book. I do the cover, and then I have it printed and staple bound and back in their hands before the semester ends.
Wow. That's
brilliant. That's
and so amazing. They all walk away with the comic in their hand, and so they see the whole process that it takes to make a comic. Yeah. And what I always hear at the end was, there's a lot more involved than I realized. And so that's the first thing that I want to you know, educate them on is, like, you know, a lot of people want to make comics.
Oh, a lot of people.
But you need to realize what this takes. It takes a lot of work.
Well, and even, like, back in the day, everyone was like, I want to have a comic book shop. And I'm like, no, you don't. No, you don't. That's experience talking, kid. No, you don't. And they don't get it in there. They're like, no, because I just sit around and I read comics all day, right?
Right.
No, there's so much more to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't know. I mean, you know, even with photography, people come up and they say, I want this shot. What they're assuming is this lens is just a telephoto wide angle.
Yeah.
Like, it does everything.
All in one right there.
Right.
It's not a Mac phone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that the students walked away with is in shock is that, like, you know, as a comic book storyteller, as a visual storyteller, you not only need to know how to draw anatomy, draw a character, but you have to be able to draw it from different angles and different poses. You have to change the camera angle.
Perspective.
Yeah. But then that's just for one shot. When you have a panel or a page that has 6 panels, you have to make this panel flow to this panel and connect in a way that makes sense and basically have a composition for the entire page. That's a whole other set.
Otherwise, you end up with, like, a Dune.
Well,
comic.
You know, yeah, because in some comics, you don't know if you're going straight across or you're doing, like, per page.
And you can do crazy stuff as long as the reader
knows
naturally
how to
follows
you
it.
You have to be able to
lead
to
them.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And that's it's a whole other skill set.
Right.
And
just one page, right? That's not like.
Yeah, that's not even the whole book.
Connecting
that's just
two
L page.
Pages. Like,
yeah, and there's more, yeah. And so there's a lot involved. But the other reason that I fell in love with teaching after I started was that every semester I'm reiterating these things that I'm re-educating myself on. I'm constantly each semester going, okay, this is going to be our topic about panel flow. And I'll, you know, I have pre-made stuff, but I'll always spend more time researching it and growing and getting better. And, well, like, since last semester I learned this, you know.
Right.
And so I'm always reminding myself of the fundamentals of storytelling when I'm teaching these classes, and that's one of the things I love about it.
So you're kind of creating your own mantra.
Kind of,
yeah. That's impressive.
I dig it.
And that's great, because, I mean, a lot of people don't get it. I mean, there's only a couple of artists in town that I know that are actually dedicated to the craft. You, of course, Barry. JP used to be here in town, but now he's in Georgia.
Georgia, I think, yeah.
So, I mean, it's difficult, and nobody truly realizes what goes into it. Now, how often are you teaching classes?
So in the spring and fall, those are the busy semesters.
Right.
I teach 3 classes. Each one is 2 hours and twice a week. So,
okay. So it's involving.
Yeah. So total class time, you're talking about 12 hours a week.
Okay.
For 3 classes.
And that's like college level, because, I mean, I know CU, and this was years ago, and I think they're still doing it, offers a comic book class.
Yeah.
I mean, an actual comic book, and they go through, like, the Frank Millers and, you know, like the
right.
key issues, the key points in comic book history that they're like, okay, you need, this is why it changed this, and this is why, and all of Alan Moore's stuff, of
it's
course.
Sort of like it's more like a comic history type of thing, but yeah. I do that, and then in the summertime, I only have 1 comic class, and that actually starts Tuesday, a new class.
Are
and
you booked already? You're already booked
yeah,
up? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, and it's in the
silly
spring.
Question
it's
of
in the
day.
Spring, so you'd have to go down in the spring.
Oh, I was going to ask, sorry, did 2020 affect that at all?
Did we did all remotely, which is somehow or another we managed to still get this comic made. I ended up meeting with them on the very last day.
Right.
at the school, because by that point it was like 2 weeks ago. We were pretty much over it. But I ended up being able to physically hand them their books and meet them physically for the first time. But up until that point, we did everything
remotely.
Wow. And it was challenging because, you know, trying to keep, you know, kids that are basically just right out of high school motivated to work on a page. And then the other thing that students learn that they don't realize, I think a lot of young artists don't realize, is that you're going to have to draw that same page over and over again, especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
And so I would say, okay, you need to do the rough draft for your page. And they'd knock it out in 5 minutes, not realizing this is nowhere near where it needs to be. You're going to have to redraw it. And they're like, wait, what? I did the work. I don't understand. I'm like, yeah, but it's not
done.
Right. It's facing the wrong way. You got characters going their opposite sides. You got characters flip-flopped on the 180 rule. You know, you don't have enough room for dialogue. You know, all kinds of problems. And so some of them get frustrated because they're like, oh, I didn't realize I was going to have to do that over and over and over again. But the challenge was like, being online, when I'm in class, I can walk by and go, okay.
You can coach immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can say, okay, you're having a hard time with that. Let me go do a quick sketch over for you and show you what you need to draw or something like that. And I didn't have that in class. So I would have to really push them to upload their sketches and then take their sketches, do a draw over, and then send it back or do it live. You know, I'd have to get them to upload their sketches before class so that I could correct them live. You know,
but
all those are recorded, by the way.
That's super cool.
They're on YouTube, but they're not listed. So if it's something that you know you wanted to check out,
post a link or something.
Yeah. Do you think digital is helping or handicapping artists versus like old school pen and paper that you and I are used to,
mm-hmm,
versus now the new batch of artists? That
I'm going to sound old school here, but
no,
I think it's handicapping.
I agree personally, but only because of
I can give some reasons why. So the tools that they have in you know Photoshop, Procreate, they're great. There's stuff in there that can help smooth out lines. You know, so when you go to make a line, so what happens now is like you're going to lose a lot of the people that like the Jonathan Glapions who could draw a pinstripe line around a page perfectly. You're losing that because people can now just allow the digital to fix it for them.
Like
in the end
result,
yeah, it's like autocorrect. But the other thing that I'm seeing more often than anything is that when you work digitally, you can take a panel that in the finished result, a comic book panel, it might only be an inch and a half, 2 inches tall. And if you look at any professional, Greg Capullo, who's doing things traditionally, they know, okay, if I have a character that's only an inch tall, that means they have no eyes. It's basically a silhouette.
Right.
They know that intuitively because they're drawing on a piece of paper. When you take someone who's drawing digitally, they're trying to detail the shit out of a 2 inch tall character because they're like, well, I can zoom in, I can see it. And I'm like, you're wasting time. No one's going to see that. And that's the thing I see the most, is like all this time is being put in unnecessary places. And they're not really, you know, learning. And then the third thing that I see becoming more and more prevalent is just the ability to draw over things. So you're like, oh, I need a character punching. Well, I'm just going to go find a picture online, draw it. And I don't, you know, want to point out, you know, call out anybody in particular, but I'm a part of a lot of comic book groups online.
Like Greg Land? No, I'm just kidding.
That would be a good example. I actually use that as an example in my class of what not to do. There was a person who was introducing their new character in one of these groups. It was a black character with a mohawk, and essentially it was, I mean, I recognized it instantly as being Superman. It even still had remnants of the diamond shaped symbol, but it was an up angle shot of him floating, and I'm like, that's Jim Lee's Superman. I recognize it instantly. Like, as a comic fan, some of these things are so iconic,
so
they stand out.
He swiped it.
And
absolute swipe.
And there was an ongoing argument, 500 comments long argument.
Oh, wow.
Between all kinds of people, and I was part of it, that, like, that's okay.
No, it's not.
And more people are believing it is.
That's
And
dude, that,
that's
like,
copyright infringement.
Well, like back in the 90s, that started a whole war between Liefeld and Peter David. McFarlane got involved.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean, there was Liefeld was swiping shit all over the place.
Right.
And so was Larson.
Right.
And it came down to the, it's not right. It is wrong.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, if you like that pose, at the very least, set it aside and draw from it.
Yes.
That's but people right. were taking these images and laying them over the top of each other, and you can see they were, even the shadows and the hatching was lining up perfectly. And he's like, well, it's now in my costume with my character's face, and so therefore it's fine. And I'm like, if you want to be a hack, yeah, you know. Okay. And so it's I'm seeing a lot more of that. And the fine line is like, you know, especially when it's someone else's art. Like, I know almost every major artist at some point traces over Eiffel Tower or traces over background art because it's like, well, you know what it's supposed to be, and I don't have time to, like, reconstruct it.
Yeah, I just need a quick layover.
You know, or a car, you know, things like that that, like, they're not, you know, creating. But when you're talking about drawing over someone's already drawn artwork –
established
artwork. Like, not even some like unknown thing, but a well established, like I immediately recognized it. And what was funny is like I literally typed in Jim Lee Superman on the internet and found it within seconds and posted it online and was like
this is
what started this war.
Oh my god.
I hate to be the one that did that, but and the thing that, you know, took me aback the most is I didn't want to be, you know,
you don't want to be a naysayer.
I didn't want to be the police about it, you know.
You want to be the negative
thing. The thing that, like, upset me the most was how many people are saying this is okay. It's kind of like with every other major conflict that we have in this country, there's a huge faction of people that are against the other faction about it. And they're like, oh, no, this is okay. And try to prove us wrong.
Okay.
And they're just not going to change their mind about it.
Let me forward this off to Jim Lee. Let me get him involved in this conversation.
You know what's funny about that? I tried.
I would not have expected less from you, sir.
I felt kind of shitty about it, but I was like, I want to know what they think.
Yeah.
I didn't really care if he was going to take action on it. I wanted to know is, do you guys think this is okay? Are you used to it and don't care?
You put in 20, 30 years of to get work, that good experience of getting your ass chewed up and spit out by companies, you know.
Well, and it's even funny because recently, kind of gonna going with this, J. Scott Campbell got pulled in.
I remember this.
With somebody that pointed out all of the errors of his Mary Jane.
Yeah.
And then J. Scott Campbell got in on it, and it's like, well, no. And he pointed out the artist, okay, this is where you went wrong,
this is wrong,
this is why this works this way. And then he, like, even took it a step further. He's all like, well, why don't we just open this up to everybody? Why don't you go ahead and do what you would do with this character?
Right.
And
it's draw it in your own style.
Yeah, draw it in your own style. JP actually did one, and I've seen other former you know, artists.
I wanted to. I just didn't have time, but I saw that too.
And then it's just kind of funny because, you know, again, swiping and doing their thing and like claiming it. And Jace got
I think the best thing that come out of that was that there are those people that are anatomy Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think one of the things that J. Scott Campbell proved in that conversation was like, if people like it, it doesn't matter.
No, everyone's got their style.
I mean, technically, Rob Liefeld proved that.
Well, yeah.
You know,
the man's never drawn a wrist in his life.
Right. I mean, we can make fun of him all he wants, but
he's got money.
He's got money. He did well. It. And I've met him a few times. He's also a really cool guy.
Art is art.
But yeah, that's the point is that, like, if I have seen stuff all over the place where I'm like, ugh. But yet it's been picked up by something big, or it's on the side of a mural or a big
wall. Well, you know what used to bother me was
Thundercats Ho.
Thundercats. Or like Kelly's Batman ears. I mean, they were like 3 feet taller than him.
Right,
so I was
just
like, this is horrible. Right. But everybody was just like, oh, it's great. It's abstract. Right. And I'm like, okay, there's no talking.
I mean, J. Scott Campbell's work has been loved, you know, since the 90s. And even I went through a stage where I really, really loved it. But as I become an artist and develop my own style, I disliked his stuff over the years, like stylistically. But I have a lot of respect for how he has created his own style.
He's got his niche. He's got his own, like, the little Tykes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Guy that Jay Mentz always gets accused of swiping from.
Right, which
is not even... Scotty Young. There we go.
Yeah.
Scotty Young,
I mean, he created his own thing. It's ridiculous, but everybody loves it.
Right, and if you can make something that's uniquely yours that people look at and go, oh, yeah, that's definitely J. Scott Campbell's work, and people like it, then it doesn't matter if the anatomy is weird or whatever. And you know, that's something that even I struggle with sometimes because I'll be at a show. I used to do this more when I was younger, starting out. I would look at someone who had a ton of people around their table.
Oh, yeah. You want to see what they're doing.
I would go over there, and I'm like, why do people like this? Why are people all over here looking at this stuff? And that's when I had to come to the realization is, like, you know, how great your anatomy is not the point. It's you know, is it something that people resonate with and they like, you know?
Well, and even to your point, Joe Madd. Joe Madd's anatomy is completely out of whack. But it works for his style and his layouts, Battle Chasers. I was even one of the backers for, you know, Airship Syndicate.
I think the thing that both Joe Madd and J. Scott Campbell have in spades is that their work fits the comic medium. Mm-hmm. It has that dynamic, larger-than-life kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And going back to what I was saying earlier, that's the thing that I feel like my work is missing. I push my work more towards, like, Adam Hughes, Frank Cho, where my characters are thick, more realistic, but it misses some of that over-the-top dynamic feeling. Right. So I'm always constantly trying to play with that.
It's a balancing act.
Yeah.
I think you capture that well, because even though your main characters are very anatomically correct, I like the demons, the vampires. I really like that picture I made where I just took your cover and zoomed in to the background characters.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say that even the background is super detailed? I didn't have to do shit to, like, make that pop out. I know how you said you don't have to focus on that, but...
Well, that's a big piece. That's a cover piece.
That
was
great. I just liked it. And I like that your darkness parts of the characters kind of have, it's more, you know, over the top. I've never personally seen a demon or a vampire.
Well, my hope is that if there's a little bit more lean towards realism, that the horror side of it will feel a little bit more realism. If it's all super cartoony and super comic booky, then the demon side will feel that as well.
Yep.
Right.
I agree.
There's that line, though, right? Like, the demons feel... I would say like a Mumra, or just like, oh damn,
they're vicious. Yeah. I mean, even like the vampires on the background,
but
on
it's
this
not
is
like
pretty
over like
actually that looks
over
more like
real,
a gargoyle,
if you will.
it looks like a gargoyle.
Yeah,
I like it. I love that though.
I enjoy it. So I know all artists are overly critiquing of themselves.
Yeah,
but I think you're on the right.
On themselves.
You're
on
the
right,
page. Yeah, you're definitely moving in the right direction.
Right on.
So we're kind of getting close to the end here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I know time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah.
So how do people stalk you? What's coming up? And I need to personally say, I love your G.I. Joe stuff.
Thanks. I got to do more of that.
I love your G.I. Joe stuff. I loved your shipwreck. I did have to go back and find it. It got buried under all your shit. I'm just like, God damn it. Because I like shipwreck. And
there's my Matt Campbell Art Facebook page has folders that are separated. So you can find all the G.I. Joes in one group folder there,
right,
if you're looking for them. I've done dozens and dozens.
I think you've done
them.
All of them. I don't think there's a character you haven't done yet.
There's a lot more characters than you realize. I definitely have not covered all of them, but there's a lot.
Ton of Joes.
Yeah.
There are a ton of Joes.
Yeah.
Well, and to be honest, like, I'm an 80s Joe guy, and classic. So I know all the characters from that era, but then they've been picked up, and it's Larry Hama has picked it back up. And now there's new characters introduced, and I'm like, who the hell is that?
Yeah.
Because I'm in a couple of G.I. Joe groups, too. And I'm like, they'll post up a character, and I'm like, huh?
Who's that? I know even, like, one character that I thought was a different name, his name was Shockwave. He's a Joe. He came at the end. And I'm like, that wasn't his name. Sure,
That was
his name. Yeah, he's like a blue.
Blue with, like, blue camo.
Yeah,
from the Transformer.
I've drawn that one.
Yeah.
I've drawn that one.
You have. And I was like, that's not his name. And sure, I'm like, Oh, well, I'm glad I didn't mouth off on that one. Like, you guys are wrong. Nope.
I usually check my work with the G.I. Joe group.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
They're very good.
They're on top of it.
Yeah.
Is there a comic that you would like that's a staple, a mainstay?
G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe?
Definitely. Well, that would be a dream for sure. It's very tactical, though. Like, every canister, every buckle has to be
military
because it's all toy based.
Yep.
So they make sure when you're drawing, I've talked to a couple like Robert Adkins and stuff who've worked on that, and that's what they say is like it's very particular about every piece being in its place because they're all basically representing their toy at all times. So that would be tough. But that being said, I tend to lean towards the Dynamite line of stuff, Red Sonja. Conan's not Dynamite, but I would love Conan as well.
Oh, Conan would be
great. The sword and sorcery, sexy and violent stuff is probably what I would lean towards. I've done a lot of Red Sonja stuff too. I've been trying to get their attention. So if you're listening, Dynamite,
I don't know if I have a friend at Dynamite anymore. Everybody out of like Corona, like everybody is gone. I mean, all of my contacts, all of my friends have just like, we got sacked or furloughed and it's well, shit.
Okay. Yep. Red Sonja is going to be making a big comeback with, they just announced they're doing the movie.
Yeah. The movie
with
and everything.
The actress who played Ghost. From Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah.
She's playing Red Sonja?
She's going to be Red Sonja.
She's still not
Red
Sonja.
The villain.
Yeah.
Oh, she's not Red Sonja. Oh, I read that.
No. She's the villain from Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes. And she's playing Red Sonja.
Yeah. When I first saw that, I was like, what?
That's not Red Sonja.
No.
We're used to the 80s chick with the fucking
Brigitte Nielsen?
Bum.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Brigitte was perfect.
Call me biased. I'll probably get a lot of comments about this, but I feel like when you have an iconic character that has been known for years to be a pasty-skinned white redhead.
Yeah.
Why are we now trying to replace that with a different character or different
that
person?
That was
just make a character. Like, I would love it if they would just make an iconic character for that actor or for, make a new character.
Yeah.
Rather than trying
for that
to take
specific
just
actor.
Create a new one. Yeah. Exactly. Like, I mean, Spidey, Miles Morales. We didn't replace Peter Parker. He's just
right.
A new Spider-Man. That's exactly what they need to do here.
Right. And maybe they will end up doing that.
Let's,
I don't know.
Let's hope.
But I don't understand why the first modern incarnation we have of Red Sonja is going to be something completely different.
Completely different.
I feel like red hair on her might even just look funny.
I don't think that's going to work.
She would not look
I don't
good
know.
With a redhead.
I personally, I think Red Sonja, very statuesque, very tall.
Right.
She is not tall.
No.
She's
but
SML.
You know,
the lifts on her boots were not big.
But, Tom Cruise has shown we can get around that difficulty.
That's true.
There are
very true. And who knows? I mean, we could be wrong. I mean, what's her name that played Domino in Deadpool 2?
She fucking killed it. She killed it.
Right. And I have been wrong in the past,
but yeah.
Interesting choices.
That the story is good enough.
Yeah. And I won't pay attention.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why, we keep taking there's one of the reasons I started to turn away from the big companies like Marvel and DC is that rather than create new characters, they just keep gender bending or race bending
recycling
their characters. Yeah. And I'm like, how difficult it is for you guys to just
make a
new character.
Yeah.
People
new
would
one.
Love it, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I don't know.
Back,
anyway,
back to it though. So, how are we finding? So, you're coming to the All Seas Fan Expo in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. 2 weeks. Is it 2 weeks?
Yes. 2 weeks.
And quick question about that. All Seas is actually just down the street from here.
Literally right down the street.
Right down
that
way.
Okay.
Yep. But the event's not there.
No, the
event's up by the airport.
Yes.
Yeah,
it is the Holiday Inn DIA.
It's the Double Tree.
Double
now.
Tree. Pardon me. Double Tree.
6900 Tower Road.
Yeah.
So, I know we'll be there setting up.
They'll go
early.
Yeah.
Artists, you guys get a little bit more leeway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll be there for sure. I'm excited. It's been a while.
We haven't done an event since over a year ago.
Yeah.
Where you and I and Mintz and Tim all were
Tim,
at the virtual.
Our first virtual show.
Fuck. We came far after that. It was just like, wow, we need to do so many different things.
We were tripping over each other.
Oh, my God. It was just like, Jesus Christ.
Virtual.
Okay. But now, look, we're getting all the studio and everything's everything's working. Yeah. How do they need to stalk you or follow you or what are the pages?
So, obviously, if you're on Facebook, I have three different pages on Facebook. I have my personal page, which is just Matt Campbell. I have my art page, which is Matt Campbell Art, and that's where you can really find all those folders I was telling you about. And then I have an Action Line Studios Facebook page. And I'm always trying to keep all those up to date. And then on Instagram, I'm Matt Campbell Art. My website is actionlinestudios.com, and we have a newsletter on there. And when you sign up for that, you get a discount on the merchandise. We have a store on there with all the old books. So if you're wanting to get into Mythica, that's the place to go, is actionlinestudios.com. And the brand new book, issue 7, is actually on there now.
Okay.
It's still listed as a pre-order, but I have the books now. So,
So those will be going out soon. I love the Action Army.
The Action Line Army.
This is fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
that's
what we call all the backers. Yeah.
That is awesome.
Or the other term is the Mythica Maniacs.
I like that.
If you haven't been able to tell, Action Line as a brand is very much pulled from my 80s heavy metal influence. In fact, I would love to create a magazine similar to heavy metal
that has independent
artists, local independent artists on it.
That's what your student project reminds me of.
Yeah.
Well, and it kind of reminds me of like the 24-hour art project that they used to do in the stores where everyone goes into the comic book shop.
I did those a couple times. Yeah. It's tough.
It is tough.
But yeah, I want to do like an adult-themed, like heavy metal was, but an adult-themed book, but it's all young or just up-and-coming, unknown artists. The other reason I wanted to do that, though, is that I saw a lot of artists who were trying to make a comic, and you know, they work a full-time job, and their pace is slow, and so they don't have a following because they don't market. And so we're like, let's take, you know, a small scene from your story, like that you've got done 5 or 6 pages, and put it in this publication or in the back of one of my issues so that people see it and start to get an interest.
So, you know? Like the publisher who does Money Shot, they're doing that. They'll have like a preview of another upcoming book coming in the back, right? Like, brilliant idea.
That's the other place. And then also the most of the Action Line Army is on Patreon, which is Patreon.com/Action Line Studios. And that goes anywhere from $1 a month to $10 a month. And with that, we not only get behind the scenes content, I upload a lot of downloadable content, like layered PSD files that go through like how I make stuff, or sometimes tutorial videos, stuff like that. So if you can't take my classes because they're, you know, I'm in Springs, a lot of that same content is uploaded to my Patreon.
Very cool.
Excellent. That's super cool.
So you could be a student without having to be in Colorado.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly.
I love the Wonder Woman. That's great.
Thank you.
I was looking at it.
Actually, just recently.
I didn't even like that. I haven't even seen that. So, there we go.
Nice.
Well, that kind of wraps it up. Matt.
Yeah.
So I guess we will see you in like 2 weeks.
Yes. And thank you so much for inviting me here and checking out the studio.
Get a tour of the studio. You had a cocktail. It wasn't like one of the signature ones, but
it's good.
It's okay. We pride ourselves in taking care of our guests.
All right.
And we look forward to having you back again.
Yes. Anytime you've got a new Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I expect to sit down.
I would love to. Yeah, absolutely.
It's awesome. Perfect.
Hello and welcome back to 5280 Geek Studios. It is Points of Articulation. I am your host, PJ Pop Culture, with your second host, the Smurf.
Hello!
He's also just Smurf. We don't say the.
Actually, you know, it's funny, Tuan's kids call me Mr. Smurf.
Mr. Smurf.
Mr. Smurf. Because they're respectful that way. I know, it's so cool. I'm like, Mr. Smurf? Yeah, I'm like,
on this the day of your birthday. I will give you this from Mr. Smith. We have a great, great episode for you guys today. Star Wars Black Series, which is the 6-inch series of action figures. And if you guys have been following Disney Plus, you would know that the Bad Batch is out.
Has landed,
so
to speak.
And we have the first two here. I would argue the two leaders.
I think, from the standpoint of the show, they are the main focus.
Right, I mean, obviously, the squad leader.
Hunter.
But
Crosshair
is a
definitely number two, oh, and would be replacing Hunter if something happened to Hunter.
And this character in Bad Batch right now has been just deliciously dark.
Very good.
Love it.
Very good. We are 5 episodes in now.
5 episodes.
And I have no complaints.
None. Well, I don't know. I wish I'm thinking there should be more action. And I know Rebels started kind of slow, and I know Clone Wars was trying to establish things, and there's this weird vacuum. And I'm expecting them, they're on the run. I guess I expected more running rather than chasing Omega.
That's what I like about Filoni, is he
never know.
You build up and you care about the characters, you have story, so when you have the major climax at the finale,
you feel it.
You appreciate it.
Let me ask you this, totally off topic. Are Omega's arms a little bit long and spindly for your liking? Because I was watching her and it just kind of reminded me of Woody.
You know, clones out are of weird.
Just, like, just asking.
You're just making me think wacky, waveable, inflatable tube man.
Put a fan under her. Watch her wave in some cars. Yeah!
I can see that. The animation is you just have to appreciate the art for what it is.
You have to feel it.
I mean, that art itself has come a long way from the first season.
Oh my god, yes.
Go back and just
and the original Tartakovsky stuff is now available on Disney Plus.
There was no shadowing in those first seasons. We appreciate it very much now. So that being said, today we're cracking open Hunter and Crosshairs from the Hasbro Black series. The cool thing about them is all the accessories and of course the helmets.
The helmets are keeping.
Yeah, and then also for you guys, so there's 5 in the squad.
Yep.
When you line them up, you get this great, collage picture. So you keep the packaging, because you can make...
I'm wondering who did the art on the box, because that is...
It's pretty legit.
That is legit. That is very nice. I mean, because even, the detail on the shadowing, they didn't skimp on it. It does line up properly so that you can make the collage. So even
every
if you
piece,
wanted to...
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
You know, they probably did announce it.
They probably did.
It's probably somebody super badass who can't wait to come on the show. So please join us.
Yes, so join us. We'd love to interview you.
Yeah, so if you wouldn't mind opening Hunter,
I will take on Hunter. Of course, there is no...
I already pre-prepped you.
Oh, did you?
Yeah,
oh, look at
you're
that.
Good to go.
PJ's seen my knife skills, and sometimes it scares him.
I like to keep mint packaging if possible. So there it is, nice solid background. The cool thing about Hasbro is they don't have the plastic built onto the card anymore, so it's kind of like a separate
slip and slide
cover, right? So do with that as you will. And wow, yeah. Be a close up here. Ooh. Just the scarring on his eye. You can see that obviously he's a clone, just slightly different.
Look at, I mean, that is just wrist, elbow. It's got the kung fu grip. It's going every which way. I like, you know what I really love the most that they've added over the years is the wrist motion.
The articulation.
Yeah, that is probably one of the key elements. I mean, they even got, the scarring from the battle for his armor, even along the chest. Right there, some scuffing. And even the sculpt on the face, I like how they did take the time and the attention to really bring it out from the cartoon. Because that is just great, great work. Oh, and even... So even one of the key things that they really emphasize on the cartoon is his wrist sleeve for his knife.
The wrist blade.
Yeah, that right there, which I'm going to bet the knife goes right into, is a great feature. Really nice.
So with Crosshair, he comes with his pack. Comes with a sniper rifle. His helmet.
See, I like that, because there's too many things, like G.I. Joe figures, especially with that ball joint breaking.
You've got too many opportunities to break it,
yep.
Right? The sniper rifle goes into the pack for, I don't know how.
Storage?
I don't know how. I was never in the military.
Yeah. Sword's on his back. And then, of course, it clips onto his back. Oh, and here's a big difference, guys. It's not just a hole now. It's actually
grooved,
so it fits right where it's supposed to. Snug as a bug in a rug. And, of course, he has a holster that actually holds the pistol. So this very much feels like a classified series. So they're taking notes from G.I. Joe. They're adding it to Black Series. This is just super legit. Look at that.
Wow.
That's snug, man.
That's nice.
You got the neck underneath. Little chin.
Little chin action.
That's...
adds a little bit of realistic to it.
That's crosshair.
Yeah, I was going to say, the scope to come down?
Scope comes
See,
down.
See, that's choice. That's pretty tight. I'm impressed with that.
That's crosshair.
Yeah.
Let's get him posed.
So for Hunter, we get the same thing. We've got the same backpack. He comes with a pistol. It looks like a tactical rifle. The knife that goes into the sheath on his arm. And, of course, the helmet, which is just as detailed as crosshair. And definitely... going along with the dual persona that is on his face. Now, the one key element, like we said, with the knife just going in.
Oh, that's snug.
Is that snug or what? That is just so... and you hear it click.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel it.
It's not going to fall out.
It's not going to fall out. The play for him, I think, is immense. That is... choice. And then, like PJ said, the same snug clipping of the backpack, seamless. The only thing that I'm having problems with is that there is nowhere to put the pistol.
No holster. No holster for Hunter.
No holster for Hunter.
Is there anything on the backpack?
No. There's no holding, there's no extra compartment, no nothing. So he's carrying his pistol and his assault rifle, which is kind of a strike.
Yeah.
I would say, because I like the feature that Crosshair has when you've got the holster, but Hunter doesn't have nearly the storage capacity.
And doesn't he have two blades?
I think he's just got the one. And then, of course, the helmet right on his head. Same as Crosshair.
Man. Really.
They really hit.
This is a step up for Black Series.
Uh-huh.
Definitely on the Trooper line. So, they're all coming out this year. These just came out this quarter. And this was also part. There was a Death Trooper and... was there an Admiral Akbar part of this? I can't remember.
Trap.
They're here to trap. So Hunter and Crosshair, they were set to release around May the 4th, when the Bad Batch launched.
Premiered, right?
Mm-hmm. And Tech and Wrecker are set to come out later this summer.
I like Wrecker.
Yeah. However, Echo will not be released or part of this series. So you will not be seeing Echo... now, although they did release a Clone Wars Echo, new 6-inch figure with the new packaging.
Right.
But I'm not sure if that's the same Echo.
I don't think so.
So
I'd have to look.
Comment. I don't know if you guys know. Share with us. But, so that's unfortunately you get 4 of the 5 for now. I am definitely looking forward to Wrecker. I think he's going to be a deluxe figure.
He's got to be. He's huge.
He's a little bit bigger. He'll be like Boba Fett, where he has more, bigger packaging, more shit like that. So
he's a bigger, sexy.
I'm sorry.
Wakeman's off the hook behind.
If we want to do that 20 seconds.
No, pass, you're fine. It's hilarious.
So. Yeah, I highly recommend picking up the Bad Batch figures. It also came with an elite squad trooper, and he's one of the villains in our series. So, yeah, so definitely check them out. And
I really like this.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know, what, 4 out of 5?
You know what, I looking at the two, he's a 5 for 5, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'm still kind of annoyed with no holster for the pistol.
That is a little
That's a little off-putting to me.
Or at least...
At least somewhere to put it?
Or is there... Yeah. No, I mean, there's like a spot where it looks like it would plug in somewhere.
That's for the magazine. So there's nowhere even for that to slide. So, I mean, that itself... But I love this feature.
Yeah.
So, the sheath is dope. 4.5, if they'd given it a holster, at least thought out the backpack nearly as much as they did crosshairs. Because this is tight. That is absolutely...
It's all encompassed.
That is... This is great play. Mm-hmm. From a play standpoint, that's perfect. Even from a collector standpoint, posing, just sculpt, accessories, the helmet. The
detail.
Yeah. This is beautiful.
Yeah. Great job on this.
Home run.
Yeah, good job. So, 4 out of 5 for me, just because I'm stingy as shit. And
4.5.
Yeah, definitely up there. Check them out, and
if you can find them,
don't pay your scalper prices.
No, they'll be out plenty.
You'll find them eventually.
Just give it some time.
Yeah, and we'll see you guys next time on Boards of Articulation.
In the meantime, we will talk to you next week. Run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.